And what we found, which was a really great result, was that the teacher eventually took a back seat, allow students to play and muck about and mess around with concepts and with learning in mathematics, especially with manipulatives. Let them just muck about and mess around and see what they can do, because kids love to play.
I didn't know you were going to go there, but you know, I'm sitting here dancing while you're talking because
how can we form questions that are open-ended and allow students kind of come in at their own level?
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray, where I'll be having conversations with awesome educators, leaders, and change agents all about their purpose and passion for learning. Hello, everybody. This is Barbara Bray, and I'm here with Rethinking Learning podcast series, and I'm so lucky today I get to talk to Shelley Vora from Ontario. In fact, I'm going to have her tell you a little bit about herself. Welcome, Shelley.
Thank you. Thank you, Barb. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here today. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I'm from Toronto, Ontario, actually just outside. I live in the suburbs, just 40 minutes outside of Toronto. I've been in education for almost just over 15 years now. I've taught every grade from K to 8 except for grades 2 and 3. So I have a variety of experiences in a variety of grade levels and obviously all the subject areas. And I recently completed my PhD in education technology in the summer. So that was very exciting. And I am now an instructional coach for my school board. So what that means is I'm responsible for four schools. I have four schools that I'm attached to, and I work with these four schools in meeting their goals. And right now, the big focus is on numeracy. So I work with teachers in meeting numeracy goals and improving student engagement and achievement in mathematics. And I also do a lot of other work with teachers, subjects, topics they're interested in. So it's a little bit of mismatch of everything, which is why I love the role. But the main focus right now is on improving math scores for students.
Wow. You know, I thought you were in Ontario. I meant Toronto. And then I didn't know all the things you were doing because I'm just going to just say how I met you is I met you on Twitter. And
yes.
And I love Twitter. And when we've been involved in many different Twitter chats together, and you're so active that in one of ours that we did in Pre-Learn Chat, you won our book because you were so active, we just had to do that. And so didn't you just say, you said something about your doctorate. Was Twitter involved with that?
Yes. One of my instructors, my professors, the very beginning of my journey at my PhD, the best advice that the professor gave me was focus your research around something you're passionate about, because you're going to be quote unquote stuck with a topic for a number of years while you do your research and write your dissertation. So I thought, you know what? I love Twitter. How can I incorporate Twitter into my research? And mathematics is a passion of mine as well. So I integrated the two. And my dissertation, my research study was actually on integrating Twitter into the mathematics classroom. And I worked with a grade eight class. So it wasn't a quantitative research study. It was qualitative. So my research was based around how students are engaged on Twitter to enhance their understanding of math concepts.
Wow, I just have to stop you there because we can't get many of our teachers to use Twitter, first for themselves, and second, hardly any use Twitter with their students. And I worked in middle school, so I know how hard it is sometimes to reach those eighth graders. I just want to, just give me a little bit about how the process went.
So when I first, it's interesting you say that because it was hard for me to secure a teacher who was willing to use Twitter in the classroom with her students or his students. But what I found was when I gave some arguments about the value of Twitter and how I've used it in my own classroom, teachers seemed to get more on board. And I think part of the issue is teachers are very scared of the privacy issues and some of the not so appropriate content that's on Twitter. So I think it's very important that we do integrate social media into the classroom, because not only are we leveraging what students are using in their personal lives, but we're also teaching them digital citizenship skills. Sorry, I always have trouble with that word. It's such a long word. So yeah, digital citizenship is very important. And I think the best way to teach that is to immerse them in that instead of avoiding it, because eventually they're going to get out there, whether in high school, university, and in their jobs, they're going to have to deal with social media because it's a part of our lives. So why not start as young as we can and teach them those skills that they need to be able to navigate technology and social media? So that was another avenue I took when presenting to teachers and trying to secure a classroom where I could work with students on how to use Twitter in the classroom. And initially the students were very hesitant because they thought it's a social media tool. I only use it to catch up on my entertainment gossip or to post my own YouTube videos. But eventually they saw the value of asking questions and learning about data management. And that was the strand that I selected, was data management and probability, because I found that it's a more engaging strand topic. And there's a lot more out there that students can use in terms of tying it into media, which is a nice connection for students. So I found eventually, halfway through the study, students started using a lot more than at the beginning. And in their exit, in their interviews, five out of my six students said they loved it.
Shelley, I want to stop you just for a second, because when you said that you're working with the students in Twitter and they actually use Twitter, I'd love to see those Twitter chats captured. Because,
yes.
Yeah, because that, to me, that's really... you know, we don't have a lot of those examples on Twitter or in social media. We talk about it, but we don't actually have those examples.
Yes, and part of my, it's very nice you mentioned that, because in my dissertation, I actually have some snaps, pictures of the student chats. And what we found, which was a really great result, was that the teacher eventually took a backseat, because part of Twitter is asking questions. So if a student was stuck on understanding a concept, they would post a question to the teacher on Twitter. And initially, the teacher was answering the questions. But as the weeks went on, the teacher found that before they even logged on, the students started answering each other's questions. So the students took on the role of the teacher. And that was really nice to see, because the students were supporting each other in an online environment, helping them to understand the homework or the concepts around data management. And students were actually independently posting YouTube videos they had found about, you know, central tendency. So, you know, when is, for example, when is mean or median the best central tendency and when looking at data? So it was very, very exciting to see that students were taking on that role of the teacher and posting their own videos and links to YouTube videos or links to articles to explain data management concepts. So that was very exciting. And part of my dissertation shows those images. I've taken screen caps of those conversations. So they are in my dissertation, but I get it. I think I'd love to post maybe some more conversations just to see, just to show mm-hmm. how powerful Twitter can be in helping students understand what they're learning.
Well, you know, what we do with this blog post, I mean, with this podcast, we put a blog post together with it. Maybe this is what right. people, when they listen to this, they'd probably love to see some examples. You also mentioned questions, and you do a lot on inquiry. Did you include that also in your dissertation and the other work?
I did not. Not the way that I normally approach inquiry, but in terms of math, what we did include was open-ended questions. So that is a form of inquiry in itself, where the math questions don't have a single right or wrong answer. So we approached a lot of the math concepts through those open-ended questions. So there were multiple entry points for students. So it doesn't matter if you might struggle with English for those ELL learners or special education students, or just students who struggle with math, how can we form questions that are open-ended and allow students kind of come in at their own level? So I found in terms of the mathematics, that was the best way to integrate inquiry for the mathematics and Twitter integration.
Wow. I'm really excited about, wow, you know, I didn't know the direction that we were going to go, but this turned out really great, because I knew you were working on your doctorate, and that's kind of why you were probably so involved with that the only thing that works is little Twitter here, a little Twitter there, you know, getting involved with other teachers. But I think there's so many people would love to know, especially there's so many math teachers out there that are trying to figure this out. How do we get kids engaged in learning? And I think you came up with some really cool ideas. You also use technology and you work with makerspaces. Kind of how are you?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm curious about all of that.
So in terms of makerspaces and technology, right now I'm working with one of my schools and we are integrating a lot of makerspace materials, for example, Sephiro's and the green screen. So that's been a really amazing journey at this one school because it's new to everybody. So we're all in a kind of a learning journey about how to integrate the technology. The best advice I can give for makerspace, or the two pieces of advice I can give, is the term makerspace itself kind of implies that it should be a space where students come. But for me, it's more for a philosophy. So students shouldn't have to, don't necessarily have to come one to one place to explore the technology or the makerspace. Makerspace can be anywhere in school. It can be mobile. So it doesn't necessarily need to be devoted in one space in the school. And the second is just play. And I say that in terms of any subject area. You know, allow students to play and muck about and mess around with concepts and with learning in mathematics, especially with manipulatives. Let them just muck about and mess around and see what they can do, because kids love to play. And we love to play as adults too. Like, you know, when we're given manipulatives in a workshop, you know, the first thing we do is, you know, start playing around with them without any direction. And I think we need to continue to build that philosophy in our teaching, just not in the primary grades, but in the intermediate grades as well, where we kind of tend to move away from the quote-unquote play-based learning. And I think more of that needs to happen. So my advice would be to just to get in there and let the kids play and figure it out. And that teachers don't need to know everything. I think that's another misconception, where teachers feel they need to know everything before they introduce to the students. And that's not necessarily the case. Let the students play around with technology, let them play around with social media, within limits, of course, and to see where it takes you, because you'd be surprised.
Well, you know, what you just said is what's so exciting. I'm doing some coaching like you are in some schools, and I'm also doing a presentation at ISTE all about creating makerspaces in the classroom and bringing play back. And it's almost like, I didn't know you were going to go there, but, you know, I'm sitting here dancing while you're talking, because it's exactly what we're doing. I'm going to be working with Jackie Gerstein. You know Jackie? Yeah, so I definitely want to be able to share some of the things you're doing in our session at ISTE. I'm going to do a P-Learn chat on it with Jackie, and definitely have to have you join. Maybe you can co-host with us. So, yeah, I had no idea, Shelley. This is so exciting.
I have so many passions and interests. So when, you know, I talk to teachers and they ask me what my specialties are, I go, I don't think I really have one specialty. I just like to like to explore all the different areas, all different subjects. So, you know, how do you integrate makerspace with inquiry, or how do you integrate math with makerspace? There are so many possibilities that, like I said, you just got to pick something and play around with and see how it works. And the analogy I like to use, which might not be the best, but I say, you know what, we're not surgeons where if we make the wrong nick or the wrong cut, the patient dies. We can play around and have fun. And if we make a mistake, it's okay, because we're not doing any long-term harm if it doesn't work. We just, you know, rethink our thinking and switch it around and try something else.
Now, you know that the name of my blog is Rethinking Learning. So you're just, everything you said is great. And you know what? I almost want to kind of have you come back another time when we can delve into this a little deeper about specifics, because what you've done, you've kind of given a great overview of who you are, what you're doing, and how you're bringing in play and inquiry and all of these things to help learning and help kids actually become better learners and self-directed learners, which is exactly what you and I, we've been talking about on Twitter forever, right?
Yes, and I think that's so important, that kids take control of their learning, and the teachers just need to take a backseat and let kids go. I mean, obviously there's still explicit teaching happening, and I think that's another misconception with inquiry, is that we just let students go. We do in a sense, but within limits, because we still have to do the explicit teaching. So for example, if you want your kids to write a persuasive essay based on their inquiry, we still need to teach the process of how to write a persuasive essay. The kids don't know how to do that. That's where the explicit teaching comes in. So I'd love to come back and talk a little bit more about that in terms of how inquiry works along with that explicit teaching that needs to happen for kids to be successful.
Okay, so this is our first podcast with Shelley Vorer. We are coming back another time because we could be talking for hours and hours. And we're going to put a blog post together that will probably talk about letting go within limits and kind of explain some of the things that you're doing, because I'm just so blown away. Like I said, I went on your Twitter and found all those pictures, and I got really excited. So, Shelley, thank you so much for joining today. I'm just
having blown me. Away. Thank you.
Blown away by what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So thanks, everybody, for joining Rethinking Learning podcast series with Shelley Vorer today. I know that you can't wait to have her come back again. Thanks, and see you soon. Bye. Thank you for joining our Conversations on Learning podcast series. You know, if you'd like to learn more, visit BarbaraBray.net, where you will find a complimentary blog post along with informative links and resources and more projects. I hope you subscribe to the Rethinking Learning podcast and become part of the conversations.